So if you could be here around 9, that would be great. Okay?
Well, listen here.
Hello, and welcome to Love After Lockup. Haha, okay. I'm Miss H, and today Mr. O and I will be talking about Season 3, Episode 6 of Love After Lockup. This week, Destiny makes a hard right into Garbage Town. Quaylen ditches his mom to get it on. Jessica acts like a sulky outsider with Maurice's family. Scott theorizes why Lindsay wasn't released, and Tyrese dresses like a pimp to pick up Shonda. If you like what you hear, please support us and leave a 5-star rating and subscribe, and any other constructive comments are welcome. If you watch 90 Day Fiancé, check out our other podcast channel, 90 Day MK, Teachable Moments with Miss H and Mr. O. Thanks, stay safe, and enjoy.
Hello, Miss H.
Hello, Mr. O.
How are things?
Good, good. I think things are going well for you, too, because we are recording early this week because you have some family fun
yep,
stuff.
Me and my family are doing a couple day getaway. So, you know, I can get out of this place for like once. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's getting pretty boring, I guess. I'm happy that I live in a big enough space where it's like, oh, well, I'll just sit over in this side of the house. That makes it seem different.
Right. Right. I feel like we're all kind of getting into that boat. And right now I'm in like a 2-bedroom place. It's like, oh, no. I have to spend too much time sitting in my bed. I don't like to do that usually.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
And speaking of people who spent a lot of time in their beds, is the people on this show this week. Lots of bed scenes. All right, but let's start with the people that did have a bed scene. And that's Chevelle and Quaylen.
Oh, gosh.
Quaylen. All right, so after the three of them leave prison, Quaylen, Chevelle, and Quaylandria go to Porky's Smokehouse for Quaylen's first free meal as a free man. He tells us in an interview that this is a release. He isn't on parole and he's not on probation. He's 100% a free man. He doesn't have to check in with anybody. While his mother is in the bathroom, Quaylen talks about how much he wants to meet Chevelle's daughter, Naila. But when Quaylandria gets back, she gets right down to business. She tells him how worried she is that he'll fall back into his pre-prison habits and asks him to move with her to Houston. He immediately shuts it down, even though he does tell us that he mentioned to her that he would move to Houston. Soon they are at the hotel near the prison, and Quaylen is seeing his mom off. She's staying with a friend rather than at the hotel, while Chevelle sets up the room for some, quote, grown-ass adult time. Before she finally leaves, we see an interview with Quaylandria saying that she'll get Quaylen to move to Houston by any means necessary, but that was filmed back at the restaurant, so the chronology is a little bit suspicious. Mm-hmm. But then after Quaylandria leaves, we get the required foreplay scene. Chevelle has put some lingerie under a fur coat, apparently. Or it wasn't even a fur coat. It was just her regular winter coat. And has romantic-ticked up the room. Quaylen gets in and immediately tucks off his shirt before getting a back rub, getting fed a chocolate strawberry, and then mercifully kicking the production crew out. Okay. So that was just about it. So predictions on this one, because I was confused by the chronology of what was going on. How hard is Quaylandria going to push for the Houston move? Because she didn't push really hard in this one.
She didn't. I wonder a little bit like how valid her concerns are, because I feel like this is a guy who's been in prison for a long ass time.
Right.
And a guy who's been in prison at a really young age. Mm-hmm. Like he's been in prison for what, 12 years?
Mm-hmm.
12 years. He went to prison when he was 17. It's like, are all those people even still around?
Yeah. Well, he didn't even know these people. Like, could think about it. Cause I mean, it's 12 years later. That's really more or less, you're talking about like his 15-year high school reunion and just like calling people up like, yo, man, what's up? Like, we haven't hung out in 15 years. Like that, I'm like, oh, that's okay. Like,
right. So I just feel like you're by default going to have a different set of friends, and especially your priorities are going to be much different if all of a sudden you're thrown into this family man situation, which is what he's kind of choosing for himself. And so I don't know if Quaylandria really needs to worry as much as she does. I mean, she's always going to have that thought in the back of her mind. It's like a mother's worry, right? Mm-hmm. Like that something's going to go wrong. And I'm not saying that, you know, she just should just relax or anything like that, but I don't know if she'll really push it too much, because I think that same concern is going to be there regardless of where he's going to live in the end.
Yeah. Yeah. I just wondered about her. I think, I don't know if it's a not pushing as hard or if it's a strategy thing. Like, I feel like she knows her son, and the way she talked to him in the restaurant when she mentioned it was definitely kind of saying, if I tell him this is what I want him to do really bluntly and really forcefully, he will buck against that. Like, no matter what it is, like, this is a stubborn, rebellious, last time he was free, he was a stubborn, rebellious kid. And if I tell him what to do, like, that's not going to be the way to get him to do it. So I feel like she is going to push, but I think she's going to be more, like, less overt about it than I thought she was going to be at the beginning.
I definitely can see her as being one of those, like, more sneaky, in it for, like, the long game kind of situation, like, manipulating and kind of saying strategic things at the right time, planting seeds of doubt.
Right. She's going to be ready to swoop in anytime him and Chevelle have a disagreement or a fight. She's going to just kind of slide in and be like, whoop, well, you know, you could go to Houston. Just, it's always an option. Whoop.
Yep. I definitely feel like it would be more underhanded, because you're right. I felt like she let go of it pretty easily. But then at the same time, I was actually kind of surprised at how firmly Quaylen kind of like put his foot down.
Right.
He's like, I am not moving there. And he was like, no. Like, that wasn't even an option.
Yeah, off the table. It wasn't him and Holland, which is like, I don't know. And then again, I'm surprised she didn't bring up like, but you told me you would, you know?
Right.
So I feel like, just she seems to be, like you said, a lot, like, she's going to be a lot sneakier about it than we had anticipated.
Right. Because he didn't even acknowledge at all that he had told her he was going to move there. To her face.
Right.
Now, in the interview, he acknowledges, he's like, oh, yeah, I kind of told my mom that I would move to Houston, but I also told my lady that I would also, like, move in with her.
Right.
So it's kind of like he acknowledges, just not to his mom, that he was kind of playing both sides.
Right. Well, I feel like we got one of the questions kind of answered from Chevelle that we had talked about before, because you had said, like, why would you make this decision? Would you go and have sex with a guy, blah, 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 and all this stuff, right? If you knew this was a possibility, but... It seems like she was pretty confident that he was going to pick Kansas City and her. And it wasn't really a concern in her mind, because she was right with him.
Yeah. Nope.
Like, at the same time, they were saying, he was like, it's not a possibility. She did the same thing. Right. So I feel like there's a lot more doubt they put in through production and in the ITMs than in when we saw it in the restaurant.
Sure. And I think, like, her doubting if he was actually going to move in with her, like, made her feel like, oh, he could potentially be a liar. But here's a thought. What if he just said that he was going to move with Chevelle, because he's like, oh, that's the potential of sex there.
Yeah, I get laid tonight if I say I'm moving in Chevelle. Yeah.
That seems like an easy pick.
That's an easy answer, right?
Yeah, it kind of bothered me a little bit. Like, I understand, like, kind of giving and taking, especially, like, in a sexual relationship, but it kind of bothered me a little bit. I don't know what it was, but the way she talked about kind of, like, it was her job to make him happy and to please him. And her justification for this was because this is going to be the father to my child. Almost like she owed him in some weird way.
Right.
And I just didn't like the way that came off.
This was not the most disturbing talk about sex in the
episode. Oh, definitely not.
But I don't know. I didn't like the way she kept talking about him. Because how he was a little boy, and he was just a little boy before. Now I'm going to show him how to be a man. I'm like, let's have less talk about little boys when you're getting ready to get down, please.
That seems a little pedo rapey.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I get what she's trying to say, but at the same time, it's like, let's not share that with the world.
Right. Right.
Oh, goodness. All right. Let's talk about Tyrese and Shonda. So Tyrese is packing up a suitcase of all the clothes he bought Shonda, including her underwear, and he's staying at a hotel near the jail. He starts to get ready to pick up Shonda, and he's, quote, looking good, unquote, as he thinks he looks like a young man and smelling good. He's wearing a four sizes too big for him, primary blue, double-breasted suit, black shirt, and blue tie, and matching blue crocodile shoes, which is sure to have some of the prison guards thinking that Shonda's pimp is there to pick her up, especially since he rolls up in a black Escalade. Tyrese is excited to do everything with Shonda, like cuddle, watch movies, take long walks, oh, and have sex. He tells us that he has been married before, but that was out of lust, not love. Tyrese is sitting there waiting in his Escalade as he creepy busts out the binoculars to spy on the situation at hand. Okay, so Tyrese mentions that, you know, he's been married before, I can only assume to the mother of his children.
Correct.
And he says it was out of lust, not love, that he got married. Do you think he is marrying Shonda out of lust or love?
I mean, no. I would say no. My money is on lust because, like, how do you describe them? Do you describe her as, oh, wow, she's sweet and loving and caring and really gets me? No, he was like, she got a big butt.
And he's got, like, a shrine to her big ass, too.
Right?
Through photo montage on his – or collage.
Yeah, so – yeah, I couldn't, because with the divorce, when he was like, oh, I don't want to paint with too broad of a brush, but it's definitely a yellow to orange flag when you ask a guy, why did you get divorced? And he was like, I didn't want to be tied down. Like, that doesn't seem like a good reason. Like, it's a good reason, but it says a lot about you. Now he wants to be tied down. This is what he feels like now.
Yeah.
I mean, in a not sexual type way, because I think he would like that. But the other way.
No, he likes long walks and he likes sensitive people and he likes cuddling. What are you talking about, Mr. O?
He also likes giant clothes.
Oh, gosh. Yes, his suit was gigantic.
So big. Like, it made Donald Trump's suits look like they were fitted. He was, like, dragging suit cuffs. Like, the cuffs of his pants were dragging on the ground. It was, oh, my God.
It made me wonder, like, is this a rental? How often do you wear this outfit?
Right? I mean,
And on what occasion?
Okay, so that's why I don't want to, like, again, you know, be too much. But it made me immediately think of the suits from Dumb and Dumber. Like, with the bright blue color.
I was yes. Like,
the blue, bright blue and bright orange. And, like, there's a whole thing with, you know, the traditional view of men's fashion is that it's about the little things.
Right.
Right. It's about slight color differences. It's about, oh, this button and the button schemes and the seams and things like that. It's little things that make a difference.
With the pocket squares.
Yeah. But it's the tiny details that make a break, like the lining, right?
Of right. Men's,
how well stitched is the lining, like things like that make a difference. And this was just all out just like blue because you can't wear it. If I wear a black suit, right? You have a black, a gray, or possibly a navy. I'm not even a big fan of navy suits, right? But you get that and you can pair it with a different shirt, pair it with a different tie, and it looks fine, right? I could wear that suit 1,000 times and everybody's going to be like, you already wore that suit. If you wear the blue suit to like two things, you're going to be like, oh, it's your big weird blue suit again. Okay, I see you.
And your matching shoes. I can't imagine those are cheap shoes.
I can't either.
So it's like, what do you wear that with? The suit? That's the only time you could ever wear those shoes.
Nothing else. You can't wear anything else. So maybe it was a rental, but I don't know. I don't want
to. Maybe that's why it was too big. I like to hope that it was a rental because what else are you wearing that to?
But when you get it rented, when you rent a suit, you get it fitted. Like, I wouldn't, if I was a suit rental place, I would not let someone walk out of my shop wearing that suit. I'd be like, no one's going to give me any business. Your pants are 3 inches too long.
Oh my gosh. Like, the whole thing was ridiculous. I don't really know what look he was going for exactly. Like, crime boss?
And okay,
pimp?
So this is the other question I've had, because we've seen people get released a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Why isn't there a waiting room for the people picking people up? I don't understand why he has to wait, like, across the friggin' highway, like, over here, like, the things. Like, what if you were visiting the prison? Why can't you go to the same place they go to and just come out to you? I don't understand why he has to wait way out here for them to drive this person in a random car as he's using binoculars.
Okay, that was super creepy. The only thing I can think of is anytime you're kind of in a government building, they really super discourage any kind of recording. So maybe there is a place like that, but you wouldn't be able to go in there with the camera crew.
Okay, right? That could be true. I'll give you that. I'm sure that the people inside of the prison do not want you filming the doors and locks inside of the prison.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Right.
Fair.
But yeah, I was just like, I don't understand your look. Like, what do you think Sean does? Do you think she's going to like this look? Like, it's definitely a choice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And what kind of choice is it?
And the rose petals. I think we've been through this. If you put rose petals on, like, white sheets.
Yeah.
They ruin the sheets. Like, yeah. That's not a cool thing to do. Like, so, I mean, I'm definitely all for it. I get the romantic look of it. And I don't know about him. He put, like, three rose petals on the bed. And it was like, yes. Like, all right. But they make, like, you have to get the fake, like, Michaels
or things.
You get to get the fake rose petals. You cannot
the
put
silk
real.
Silk flowers.
I just, all I could do is feel bad for the, you know, cleaning staff of that hotel. It's like, oh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But, okay. And then his creepy binoculars. Like, I'm just like, that whole thing, I would be terrified if I saw a guy wearing some random blue suit with binoculars across the street from the prison. Right. I would be like, what is happening over here?
Would have made a phone call at some point.
Yeah, I would have been terrified. I've been calling the police.
Imagine if it's not you, but it's like somebody just like looking out their prison, their cell window, being like, that doesn't seem okay.
Something suspicious is happening out there.
There's some cartoon pimp out there with binoculars. I don't like it.
I'd be like, oh gosh, I feel like this guy is like, planning an escape or something like that.
Right. Okay. All right. So moving on. Let's hit these because we always save them for last. We're going to hit them now. That's Sean and Destiny.
Oh, goodness.
All right. This was, I think, the most stuff that happened in this episode
of any of the groups.
All right. So after Sean is caught with his two dumb big lies from last week, we see the aftermath this week. Initially, Destiny just gets a big margarita and starts chugging it. And then Sean tries to make a joke out of it, saying things like, oh, I must have forgot, regarding his kids. Afterwards, in the parking lot, she lectures him, and he just stammers things like, oh, I don't know why I did it. I just wasn't thinking, I guess. I like my Sean voice. Destiny wants to know what other things he's hiding from her. Like, when is the last time you've been with a woman, which it doesn't seem like he lies about? Or when is the last time you were with your baby mama, Kelly?
Are you kidding? It definitely seemed like he lied about it.
The thing he lied about, okay, I'll get to it. Or when is the last time you saw your baby mama, Kelly, which he very, very much lies about, saying it was 7 years when it was closer to she was that woman 1 year ago.
Yeah.
Destiny tells him that she can't stand lies. So much so that she's a completely open book and would never lie to him. She then immediately in an interview tells us that she's lying to him. There are multiple secrets that she intends on keeping from Sean forever, and we'll find out about these in a bit. But then they are on their way to the hotel, and she's flipping back and forth between still yelling about the lies and wanting a coach purse and to go parasailing. Sean is very lost and confused by all her mood swings, but he is very excited for sex in the hotel. He tells us what his plan is, and let's just put it this way. The way he describes his technique is not going to win over any women at all. Okay. So Sean gets the room ready by putting tulips everywhere, which Destiny takes a much-needed shower. She is touched by the effort and then tells us in an interview the one secret she's keeping from Sean is that in prison, she has been in sexual relationships with women. She even has their names tattooed all over her body.
God.
And she plans on continuing to see women while she's in a relationship with Sean, and that she has no intention of telling Sean anything about this. And of course, just to really make this land as hard as possible on us, when she's saying this, they're cutting back and forth between her telling us this in an interview, and being basically naked and making out with Sean.
God.
The next morning, we see them after what they both describe was a very fun and satisfying night. Sean clumsily tries to bring up Destiny's drinking, which is what he blames her poor reaction to the lies on. He's worried that if she's drunk, she'll mess up before her court date and he'll be out of his $50,000. She immediately gets defiant at his perceived control. She describes herself as a party girl again, and that since she's going to be living in Vegas, she's not going to live like a square. Unbelievably, Sean thinks that the solution to this problem is that he's going to have to get more controlling.
God.
Okay, so that's where it ends.
Poor dummy.
So last week we kind of felt bad for Destiny for being stuck in this relationship with Sean. But is it really the other way? Is Sean stuck in this relationship with Destiny?
No one's stuck in a relationship with either one, but Destiny has definitely revealed that she belongs to Sean.
Oh, yes. She took a hard left into garbage town this week.
God. Definitely. They're two garbage people. Like, just I don't know.
Such
it's like
trash.
You feel bad for Destiny. Okay, so let's just start off with, okay, so we picked up where they left off, which, let's be real here, Destiny's been drinking what seems like a lot.
A lot. Yeah. Yeah. She's like three. She's not that big, right?
Mm-mm.
She's big with the weight wise. She's bigger, but she seems like a pretty short woman. And she's had like
at least three giant things that we've seen.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Agreed. And so I kind of feel like it's not starting off on the right foot, which I feel like is also telling of how things are going to go in the future, because she said that she's a party girl. So guess what? Her drinking is something that they're going to have to deal with, and she's going to be like this. Basically, this is the Destiny you get.
Yes.
Right? So when Sean talks about like these mood swings and I don't know what kind of Destiny I'm going to get, it's kind of like, well, has Destiny been drinking?
Yes. That's the difference. Yeah. That's what he didn't seem. There's so much that he just doesn't pick up on that it's just like,
he's
oh my God.
Dumb.
He's like, I don't know which Destiny I'm going to get. It was like, she's drunk, dude. She's drunk.
There's drunk Destiny and sober Destiny.
Right.
So it's pretty easy to identify.
And she's hiding these women
conditions are.
Whose names are tattooed onto her
yes!
body. At some point, you'd be like, who the hell is Alicia, Destiny? Why do you have Shauna written on your arm? Like, who are these people? Why did you get their names tattooed on your face?
It's
on your
like
body?
Over her chest. And I bet he's staring at her boobs at some point.
Right.
How do you not notice this? Sean is just, oh my gosh.
And especially because he's like, oh, I got this one covered up. I can still read Alicia ridiculously.
Oh, yeah, clearly. Absolutely. There was an attempt at a cover-up, but not very well. I feel like that would
lend itself
to more questions.
Like,
right. He would be like, okay, who is this? And not like necessarily thinking, oh, it's, you know, like her sexual partner, but you would think like a daughter maybe. A sister,
at some
a family
point, you're like,
member.
This person was so important to your life that you permanently etched them onto your body.
And gigantic, too, that Alicia one.
If I'm going to be your life partner, these are like people I should probably know about. Like, if they were this important to you.
She identified at least four women.
Yes.
And then she even said, like, oh, and I plan on getting more women tattooed to my body.
Yeah.
And it was
just
like,
what the hell?
Okay.
And I don't know. See, it was funny, too, because they foreshadowed before. She was like, I don't care if you cheat on me. Just don't lie about it. And then she was like, wait a second. No, don't cheat on me.
Right.
Because she 100% fully intends on cheating on him. She's just like, this is a guy I'm with, and I will be cheating on him.
Yeah. I wonder, too, a little bit, like, is she really a lesbian and she only sleeps with guys to get things from them? Because don't you think it's a little curious that she doesn't have any guys' names tattooed to her body? It's only been women.
Right. Well, I mean, I took that. Yeah. Well, because this she's been in and out of prison. Right. So this is not it's not like Quaylen where she's just been there for 12 years since she was a teenager. And like, so it's pretty much only been women around. No, she's had, in theory, opportunities to be with men.
Right. But at the same time, it's kind of like, well, she's had opportunities to be with men and none of them have meant anything to her.
Right.
So I kind of, and she does seem like a user.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know? So it's kind of like I could see her just being like, yeah, I'll just say I'm into guys because I can get money, drugs, get them to do things for me.
Get them to buy me a house in Vegas so I can drink all the time. Yeah.
Yeah, right? But I'm not really into guys. I'm really into girls.
Right. I mean, I guess that's it. Because, I don't know, because it doesn't, and this is the big thing I like wrote in big letters, it's still cheating if you're bisexual. Like, that's not.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's not like a.
I said that too. That's funny. I had that in my notes as well. It's like, committed relationship doesn't mean women don't count.
Right. Like, that's not the way it works. And, like, I don't know. I mean, it just seems to me it's one of those things that I could see, not necessarily me, but I could see someone in a committed relationship where if she was like, no, women, you know, being with women like really means a lot to me and I'm going to continue to do it, then like it's like an open marriage type situation where he knows about it. That would be okay. I wouldn't be morally opposed to that, but I am very morally opposed to, yeah, I'm just going to cheat on him all the time. That's no, we're just going
to
do that.
Well, I feel like she doesn't even have to play it that way. Sean's a big fat dummy. Let's be real here, right?
Yes.
And so if Destiny was kind of like, oh, yeah, I'm going to have sex with this other girl, you can watch us if you want. Sean, I feel like, would be
okay. Yeah, he'd be into it.
Well, where did I sit? How did I get to be so lucky? This is like my fantasy. I'm like,
you sit over there.
Don't leave the chair. Don't do anything.
Don't leave that chair. You stay right there. No, keep your pants zipped up. No, you just stay there.
Yeah, we don't want to see that.
We don't need to see anything. You just sit in the dark.
Oh my gosh, you should have seen the horrified look on my face when he was talking about Sex with Destiny before Sex with Destiny. I was just like,
It was literally like everything anyone's ever heard of. You've ever heard about women at all. Ever heard about women talk about sex at all. They're like, what do you not want to do? He was like, well, let me describe how I do it. Like, that was exactly. He just I'm just going to like give it to her really hard. Like, as much as she wants and as long as she wants. I was like, well, it's going to take a long time. I can guarantee you that.
I was horrified when I heard him. And he said it so casually too. And I kind of felt like the way he was talking about sex in general was like he wasn't trying to talk about sex or at least be obvious that he was.
Right.
But Sean isn't witty enough to come up with anything like double entendres or anything like that. He is not smart enough.
No.
So he just says it. And you're just like, oh God.
He just
so
like I and awful. Also he had 6 kids with Kelly. Poor Kelly.
I know.
Poor Kelly. Just as long as she wants. And I'm like, oh wow, that's gonna be a while. if you're waiting for her, that's gonna be up to when she decides it.
Speaking of the kids, okay, so which kids would you disown if you say you only have 2?
The younger ones.
Oh, God.
I mean, I'm putting myself in Sean's mind, right? I think, actually, no. Let me go back. Probably the older ones because he's also going about his age. I was thinking from the terms of if I was getting a new young girlfriend, right?
Yeah.
I would assume she would not really want to be involved with raising any kids. So I'd be like, what, they're like 16 and 17. Like, they're going to be gone. Like, they're done.
Oh, God.
We're done with them, right?
She is not equipped to be a mom at all.
And so that would be if I was a less scrupulous person. I would just tell her I had the older ones and that's it. I'm done with being a dad. We don't have to worry about it. Right? But him, how's he going to say, oh, they're 16 and 17. By the way, I'm also 34.
Yeah, right.
You know, like, she's going to be, I think she's smart enough to do a little math on that and be like, wait a second.
Yeah. I don't know. Gosh. She is not equipped to be a mom. She seems so selfish. She tells him straight up, I'm a party girl. This isn't going to stop.
Yes.
Drinking ain't illegal. So guess what? I'm going to be drinking all the time is like the impression I got from her.
This is just going to go bonkers.
Like, yeah,
she told him, I have no intention. I am a party girl. Like, and it's funny because most of the other people, I think everybody else who got out of prison has been like, I ain't going back there. Even the ones we know go back were like, I have no intention of going back there. I'm going to do whatever it takes to stay out of prison. She was like, yeah, I'm a party.
Nope, I'm going to party. I'm going to have a good time.
She's like, whatever. Like, I don't think she has at any point said, I don't want to go back to prison.
Right. Well, because, I mean, from her perspective, like, I'm sure being free, that's where all the women are.
Yeah, that's where all her long-term life partners are, exactly.
Right. Yeah. How is she going to get more tattoos if she's not in prison?
Yeah.
All right. So then he talks about sex, and he's not the only one who kind of talks about sex with their ex-partners in this episode. But he said that he, you know, was having sex just to have sex. But with Destiny, it was a lot different. It was like he was making love.
Oh, he said making love. Oh, my God. It's just that's what you hear. Like, that's 100% him just repeating what you're supposed to say.
Okay, so this was my take on it, right?
Okay.
Okay, Sean is a lot older. And it seems like he's someone who's, like, naively inexperienced to me, too. Like, he's been on and off with Kelly, and it's because he's tried to find someone else but been unsuccessful, so he always ends up back with Kelly. Kelly is right. kind of my impression, right? So he really has only had, like, one consistent person he's had sex with.
Sure.
Like, this entire time. And they've been, you know, on and off for, what, 22 years? So that puts him at about 23.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of like, yeah, you know, guess what? When you're 23, I don't care. If you're a guy, you have a pretty high sex drive. You're having sex to have sex.
Sure.
Yeah, maybe you are in love with the person, and that I'm not saying that's not possible, but you're probably, like, motivated by, I want to have sex. Oh, sure, with this person I love, sure.
Yes, I'm horny now, and we have this arrangement, so awesome.
Okay, as opposed to 45, when maybe the sex drive isn't so high,
right.
It's like, okay, it's more of a choice, like,
sure.
Okay, do I want to have sex just to have sex, or is it because I want to feel a connection with this other person? So it's kind of like, I don't think that's specific to destiny. I think that's a mistake in his mind to somehow separate the two, because, you know, if he had known Kelly later on in life where maybe sex wasn't his primary motivation, maybe he would have, you know, had sex with her for other reasons other than just to get laid.
Possibly. I don't know. I think, A, I'm closer to 45 than I am to 23.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as big of a difference as you're making it out to be in terms of, like, sex drive.
Oh, God. I would hope it dies down from, like, 23. Holy hell.
Okay. We'll leave that there. But two, like, I feel like at both ages, like, there's all kinds of different sex you can have. Like, there is, you know, more involved, more romantic sex. There is just, let's bang this out sex. Like, there is, even when you're 23, there's different things. I just think maybe he never thought of it like that. Or more likely, I don't know, but he liked Kelly that much.
Yeah, I definitely got the impression that he didn't really like Kelly that much. And she was definitely carrying the two of them in that relationship. I think Sean's a fairly simple man.
Yes.
Like, he seems very simple-minded to me.
Right.
So it's kind of like, I don't really know if he thinks about anything past, like, what he currently is feeling.
Yes, I agree with that. I agree with that. Yeah. Especially if the last time, if what he's comparing it to is Kelly and you're like his last current thing. He's not thinking about back when he was 23 with Kelly and they were really into each other or whatever. He's thinking about the last time when it was a year ago and they tried it and it didn't work. Like, that's the last sex he was thinking of. So, you said he was lying. He was clearly lying about when the last time he was with Kelly was.
Yes.
But I 100% believe that Kelly 1 year ago was the last time he had sex.
Oh, yeah. No, that's what I was. Yeah. Him saying it was, like, you know, 7 years ago that him and Kelly, it's like, nah.
Right. Which is clearly, at least he's smart enough that that's probably their youngest kid is 7.
Is that? Oh, God. That must mean they, like, if it was 7 years ago. That means they must have a bunch of kids, like, or all their kids are really close in age.
I refuse to believe that he's so dumb that he said the last time he was with her was 7 years ago and they have a 5-year-old. He's not that dumb.
I wouldn't put it past him. He's dumb. Because I wouldn't even be surprised if his kid is, like, just turning 7 and he was like, oh,
yes.
7.
Yes, exactly. I was like, I really think he just picked the age of his youngest kid and was like, that's it. 7. 7 years. That's the answer.
Wow. Okay. What do you think about the future of this couple? What are their chances? Let's give it, like, odds.
Okay, so, it depends on what you mean. Like,
that they're gonna make it.
Well, I think it's probably 70-80% she ends up back in jail. So does that count as making
absolutely.
It? Right?
Yeah.
And below that, I mean, is making it him, like, you know, sitting and giving her money while
Let's
she goes.
Let's say 5 years. Still together in 5 years.
Don't you think he would sit and pay her money while she went off and screwed a bunch of other women?
He's got to run out.
Like, but I'm saying, wouldn't you think he would work, sit at home in a house, fund their whole lifestyle, whatever it is, she might get extra money, while he sits alone in the house and she goes out and screws other women? Like,
yeah,
and he would stay with that. He would probably stay in that. And so does that count as making it? Like,
no. Would you consider that a successful relationship?
No, but they're technically legally not divorced, right? Legally still married. So I wouldn't. So the chances of an actual successful, fulfilling relationship for both of them is vanishing.
Pretty low. Vanishing. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Next up, we have Scott and Lindsay, but more so just Scott. Scott starts off the morning by calling the Federal Bureau of Prisons when Lindsay's mom and daughter knock on the door. Miley Grace, Lindsay's daughter, is very disappointed that Lindsay didn't get out on time. Scott is frustrated because no one is giving him answers, and he claims that the guy who talked to him last night was difficult and belligerent. He finally gets word that Lindsay is still in prison. Scott asks why she wasn't released, but the case manager says that they are not allowed to release any information because it's not public information. They say that the only way they will be able to find out anything is through Lindsay herself. They ask if there's anything preventing Lindsay from calling, and the case manager says they have no idea. Brenda, Lindsay's mom, theorizes that Lindsay has managed to piss off the right people in charge by doing something like writing someone up for breaking the rules, and they're just all being vindictive against her. Scott, on the other hand, theorizes that Lindsay's beauty has caused her to get jumped by other inmates because they're jealous, and she possibly got in trouble by trying to fight back. They were all looking forward to seeing Lindsay on her birthday, which is now today, and everyone is incredibly disappointed. Scott is especially concerned because he only moved to Mississippi to be with Lindsay, and if she isn't getting out and they don't know when she's going to get out, the move was absolutely pointless. So my question is, they all seem to have their own theories of why she wasn't released.
Uh-huh.
Who are you more likely to believe, or do you have an alternate theory of your own?
Okay. I definitely don't believe Scott's weird porn fantasy that, oh, she was so pretty that the other inmates in prison had to jump her because of jealousy.
They had to like beat her up to make her to like make her unpretty.
And maybe while they were beating her up, like they accidentally started kissing or something. I don't know how it would happen.
Scott, ridiculous.
So definitely not that. Honestly, what I think it is, I don't even know if it's her fault. I think it's probably a paperwork snafu. Somebody didn't file the thing the right time, something like that. Somebody was out sick, mm-hmm. and so they didn't get this right form from A, B, and C to get the halfway house thing. Like, my theory is still on bureaucratic snafu and not anything she did wrong. But man, her mom was immediately like,
that was
she
a
fucked
weird
up.
Theory, yeah. too. It was like, but why is Lindsay going around snitching on everyone? That seems like, yes, you would have a huge target on your back.
Yeah, I don't – but hers is immediately like, oh, clearly it's her fault. Like clearly she went out and found trouble for no benefit to herself, which is funny because all the trouble she's been in has been a huge benefit to herself. She was making tons of money dealing drugs. Like, so it's not like she goes out and finds trouble just –
to be in trouble. Yeah, because they definitely contrasted her life at the beginning when they were kind of introducing her. She was like in college. She was like doing fine. She had the kid maybe a little bit more unexpectedly, but, you know, doing what she could do. And, you know, her mom said that she had high hopes for her. And then all of a sudden, like, she started getting evasive and like she didn't even realize how bad it was until she was arrested.
Right, right. So she was... yeah, decent at that. But then to sell that, it's very different from her saying like, oh, no, she always found trouble. Like 100% of the time, she would be in trouble all the time. Like that's not the person, that's not what you said at the beginning. And it just it didn't slide. She, I mean, we haven't seen her very much.
Yeah.
She seems smart in a, you know, very streetwise kind of way. And so I definitely don't see her as the kind of person that's going to go around snitching on people.
Right. That seems like an awful idea. I mean, like, even us who have never been to prison, who know very little about
anybody about anything.
It's like, you know that much, right? Snitches get stitches and all of that. So it's like, and especially if you're that close to the end, it just seems like if you really wanted to get out, just keep your head down.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that just seems to me. I wouldn't look at anybody in the eye. I would just be like, nope. I'm not talking to anybody. I'm not doing anything. We're just gonna get.
Yeah.
We're gonna power through this, and
Right.
So. Yeah, I don't know.
Something really quick that I noticed that I was just like, Okay, so Lindsay makes it seem like that their financial situation isn't very good. She says that, you know, like, she had to have Scott buy Miley Grace some clothes, right, for school, things like that. So it definitely is setting up this idea that Scott is going to be the provider for her family, which includes her daughter and possibly her mom.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Miley Grace freaking had acrylic nails on, like, professionally done. Okay. She's like, what?
10.
9?
I think she said 10? It was 10. Yeah, she was 10.
Yeah. What 10-year-old is getting acrylics done? And so I'm not even going to judge the fact that you're getting acrylics done at 10. Whatever you do, you. My question is, that shit is not cheap. So who's paying for these acrylic nails when you can't even buy clothes?
That's an interesting point. I obviously didn't notice the nails at all. Because, I mean, who would... I don't know, who would trust a 10-year-old to take proper care of the nails? Like, shouldn't she be on
acrylics,
like,
you don't have to do much.
Shouldn't she be on, like, monkey bars and shit? Like, do like maintain them, but to not break them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I feel like you're 10, you should be doing things that are going to break nails. That's not, like, stop. Right. And I couldn't understand, and I don't know, my 10-year-olds, well, my 11-year-old grows her, we don't get anything nails done. Mm-hmm. One of them's like me, she has her nails always super short. And the other one, we have to, like, cut your nails. They're getting long. But I couldn't – I don't know how women can do it with the nails, with the typing and on phones and stuff. It's just crazy to me.
Yeah. You kind of get used to it, but there is too long. And so even sometimes when I see women with, like, how are you typing with that? Like, yes. I can definitely tell when my thumbnails get too long because texting becomes a burden. I'm just like, ah!
Right, because you have to flatten them out enough that you're hitting multiple keys at the same time.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's all – it. That's a good point that I did not notice.
Just my end questions, like – who's paying for this?
Who's paying? We still don't know who's paying for the flight, like things like that.
Yeah. But it kind of makes me wonder, like, maybe they're not as poor as they're making themselves out to be.
Right.
And that Scott kind of painting the picture of Scott as a sugar daddy is just like something extra. Uh-huh.
I wonder, and this is what kind of got me, is they kept telling the mom, and this could be a personal thing. I don't know how it works. Because they kept saying, that's not public information. We can't tell you that. It's not public information.
Right.
Right? Which seems fine. You can't just call a prison and randomly ask about whether a prisoner's conditions. That makes sense. But it seems to me that you should be able to, like a hospital, like to be like, no, these people you can tell. Like, I have signed a release that are these people you can tell.
I don't think it works that way at all.
Why not?
I just don't think it works that way. Like, I don't know, just even working at a university, I know there are a ton of laws, like, we can't say anything, like, we can't even acknowledge a student is enrolled there, you know, like, it doesn't matter that they're your family or not, like, you could be the parent paying the tuition, you cannot get any kind of information like that, and I kind of feel like the only situation maybe is if they were her lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
That might be the only kind of exception in that case.
Interesting. Because that's tricky too, because I remember when – that's a very different than it used to be, because I remember when my ex-wife was in college, she used to have to call the financial aid office and they wouldn't tell her anything because her name wasn't on the bill. And so then she'd have to call her mom, and she grew up poor. She went to, like, it was full financial aid, 100%. So her mom wasn't paying any bills, right?
Right.
But you had to call her mom and be like, here, mom, I need you to call the financial aid office, and here's the questions I need you to ask because I need the answers to these questions. And she was like, okay, I guess.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I actually – a funny story. I have a friend who his dad was this Disney engineer, and he just, like, really wanted his son to do engineering.
Uh-huh.
And my friend dropped out of engineering, like, his freshman year.
Yeah.
But he never told his parents. He always just told his dad, you know, like, oh, yeah, I'm in engineering. And he graduated in a, like, sociology or something like that.
That's
but
insane.
He walked in the School of Engineering graduation, like, their commencement. And, like, because they can never pull his records. Like, the parents have, even if your parents, they pay tuition, you have no rights as a parent to access any information about your child.
That's weird. I feel like that wasn't a big thing. I feel like it goes state by state, actually. because I feel like here it's not the same.
Oh, yeah. You can't. It doesn't even matter if you're paying the bills. Like, you cannot get great sex.
We also, there's no way you would walk on the, from within the School of Engineering in my school.
Oh, ours was so big, though. Our school was, like, super big. So all you had to do was have the card. You just have the card and you have the right color hood or cord or whatever.
Oh, I guess tassel, you could sneak, I guess, for undergrad. You see, he snuck in. No, no. They checked us before they let us on the field. Like, no, they came.
They wouldn't know you. You just have, as long as you have the card.
No, you had to bring your student ID card and, like, get your card. Like, the card that was the thing. Like, you had to go into the gym, go in, they checked you off the list and said, here's the card. And then you could walk up and go. And
it was so like long ago, seating. I don't even remember, but I'm pretty sure that it was, you just showed up.
So crazy. Yeah.
All right. Moving on to our last couple, though.
All right. So the last couple is Maurice and Jessica. So it's now been 3 days since Maurice's release, and he and Jessica are on their way to see his daughter, Michaela. Maurice tells us that his daughter is his kryptonite and that his biggest regret is not being there for her. Jessica tells us that she talks to Michaela almost every day, but has barely ever spoken to Kaniqua, become Michaela's mother. At the house, Maurice is reminiscing and hanging out with Michaela and her family as Jessica is growing more and more agitated that she was never introduced and is being ignored in the conversations. When it's time to leave, she half yells and half cries at Maurice in the car about how awkward and frustrated she was and how she wanted him to do something about it. She worries that this is an instance of being from two different worlds and that she might be dealing with this for a long time to come. Later on, we see Maurice wake up in his cousin Roni's house, where they're staying because he can't leave the state. They're also staying there. He's staying there with Jessica, with Roni, his wife, and his three children. It's a very crowded house right now. Roni and Maurice talk about what has happened while he's been away in prison, and Roni busts out a lot of funeral programs for all their gangmates, basically, that have since died. Maurice even considers himself lucky to have been in jail while all this went down, because any of them could have easily just as well been him. Later, while they're out at a convenience store, someone yells something out of their car at Maurice, and he tells us that they made a vague threat to him with hand signals. And then Jessica freaks out and tells us as their segment ends that they cannot possibly live in Compton. All right, so going back to the house, whose side are you on at the Michaela's house thing? Should Maurice have done more to get Jess involved in the conversation, or should have just dealt with it better?
I think it's a little of both, but it's definitely, like you said, the choices are Jessica and Maurice, because I think Jessica also tried to make it out like it was, Kaniqua, is that her name?
Yes.
Yeah, Kaniqua's, like, her family's fault for not, like, embracing her more, right?
Right.
But it was kind of an awkward situation. It kind of made me wonder a little bit if Jessica really had been talking to Michaela every single day.
Uh-huh.
Because it seems to me that if she had such a great relationship with Michaela, that Michaela would have tried to do something more to include her in the conversation or something.
Sure.
But I mean, like, personally, I get it. Like, Maurice, he's kind of like the common factor here. So he should have taken it upon himself to introduce them when they first got there. And I get that. That was his responsibility.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, if I was in that situation, I was Jessica and Maurice, like, he's just so excited to see his daughter. He's not thinking about me.
Sure.
Yeah, I would have been, like, upset that he's not thinking about me. But at the same time, I wouldn't have been sulking in the corner.
Right.
I would have, you know, taken it upon myself to introduce myself and try to not inject myself in the conversation, but at least, like, try to be a participant in it.
Right. She wasn't even, like, laughing at the jokes. Like,
oh, no.
Like, she was just sitting there, like, sulking. And then when you do that, it's really off-putting to everybody else. Nobody wants to include you in the conversation because you're just weird lady sulking in the corner. Okay.
Yes. She was definitely giving off super negative vibes. And I would be like, okay, she's clearly upset about something, but we're not comfortable enough with her to, like, ask her, oh, are you upset about something? So we'll just leave her alone.
Right. And so I also got the impression that I don't know that Maurice knew those people all that well. Because if you think about it, what happened is he dated Kaniqua 9 years ago?
Yeah.
Right? I don't even know how long they dated and how, like, involved he was with their family or anything. Like,
It sounded like, because he said it was about a year and a half before they got pregnant.
Uh-huh.
And then I think she had the baby right before she, like, kind of gave him the ultimatum. And I really want to say that the baby
was like, yeah, now that there's a baby in here, you got to straighten up. And I can't have my baby around this.
And good for her for sticking to her guns. Uh-huh. I was actually really impressed, because you always get, like, those people who say that because they're trying to force some kind of change. And then when it doesn't actually change, they kind of cave because they're just like, oh, but well, I really still wanted, really to wanted to be with you, but I was hoping you would change.
Right.
But I guess you're not, so we'll still be together. So I was like, good for you. Yeah. Like, standing your ground.
Yeah. So, but I mean, I get what she's saying, because it's like, it is weird that you say you talk to this daughter every day, but you've never talked to the mom. Like that, or twice, I guess.
It was How did just that even get set up? That just seems so odd. Well, that's odd what I'm saying.
My takeaway from that was that basically she talked to the mom to get set up where she could have, like, you know, like a Hangouts chat or a Facebook Kids Messenger thing with the daughter, and then never talked to the mom again once that got set up.
Yeah.
Right. But I don't know. It just seems, because I don't think she sees the daughter ever. I think she just talks to her.
Oh, yeah, yeah, sure. But I don't know. Michaela didn't even seem that excited to see her either.
Right.
She, like, gave her a hug at the very beginning, and that was kind of it. She was kind of like, oh, okay. And even Jessica was like, oh, can I get a hug?
Right.
And then she was like, okay, and hug, and then it was like, okay,
and I totally get the kid being, because...
more excited about her dad.
That's a really tough thing, because she's so really excited to see her dad, and her dad's still kind of a stranger. Right?
Yeah.
And so I'm excited about it, but I'm still nervous about it, because I don't really... know this guy, but he's my dad. I mean, he's dad, and I'm excited to see him. So it's like, that's a lot of things going on in her, for her, just with that, let alone to be like, well, let me think about this, his wife over here who's in the corner, who came along and is, you know, again, frowning in the corner.
Yeah, but it just wasn't a good look for Jessica, and I just, you know, and for her to kind of turn on Maurice and, like, get all mad at him, he was like, wait, what'd I do?
Right.
And it's like, okay, Maurice, like, you could have done better, you know, but it's just kind of like, for her to, like, lash out at him immediately was just like, oof.
Right. But it's also, and I did feel when she was like, kind of different worlds, different cultures, because, you know, different, I nothing to say but cultures, it's like more or less expected for people to be introduced. Like, oh, you don't talk until you've been introduced. And other places just like, no, what are you doing? Everybody's talking. Why are you
just hop right in?
Yeah, just hop right in. Why are you over there quiet? You're weird. Right. And so it seems like his family and that family was more of the second. And she was waiting for, well, let me sit here and wait until I've been properly introduced to everyone before I can actually feel comfortable engaging the conversation. Like, I feel like she really felt unwelcome in a conversation that didn't seem that unwelcoming to me watching it on TV. Like,
well, that, and I was going to say, like, kind of going back to the sulking thing, it was like she didn't even look like she wanted to be there at all.
Mm-hmm.
She looked like all frowny face and like,
and she was like sitting behind
arms.
People who were standing up. It was,
it's not an ideal situation for her to be included. I kind of felt like in the interviews, like, Maurice was definitely squinting hard, like he was high or like. drunk or something.
I don't know. Yeah, like, that
what's
was
going on with him.
Yes, they did a lot, and I feel like he learned a lot but didn't say much. Like, there's a lot of information that was getting thrown at Maurice this time, especially in the Roni segment, right? When he was like, wait, this guy's dead? Wait, this guy's dead too?
I mean, that guy got stabbed? What?
Yeah, and it was like,
I used to smoke weed with him, and I slept at that guy's house, and I was driving that guy around all the time.
It's sad that he's, you know, however old he is, 20, mid-20s, 28, 20-something, 28, something like that. And he's having those conversations, because those are the same conversations I hear my parents have, or people in their 60s and 70s had. Oh, they died? Oh, man, we used to go over to their house all the time. Like, to have that conversation at, like, 26, and to have all the books just boom, 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 that's a lot. And I don't – that was a lot for him to take in. And, again, that's another time when Jessica's like, we just need to get out of here. We just need to get out of here. And it's like, let the guy, like – it's like 12 years of deaths of, like, in a rough place with the guys who were running around were rough guys. They were always going to be more likely to die. He was a Crip. Like, yeah, that's going to happen.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. So when the confrontation in the convenience store parking lot, I was kind of confused what started that. Does he have, like, some kind of, like, gang tattoos or something that I'm just not noticing?
Probably.
Because it's not like he was wearing colors.
Well, he didn't have anything on, so I don't think any of it was colors. I would guess tattoos that I wouldn't recognize. You know how it is, like, same thing we talk about all the time. I didn't notice the acrylic nails. You always notice people's shoes a lot more than I do.
Yeah.
Right?
That's true.
So, like, you just are attuned to picking up different things about people. And if you're in a gang, if you're in the gang life, then that's...
Yeah. Well, okay, because I know tattoos are, like, a thing. Tattoos and colors, right?
Right.
But he wasn't wearing any colors. He was wearing a white tank top. But then it's like, well, if it's the tattoos thing, like, why don't you just wear a shirt then?
Yeah. Well, I mean, so a long shirt. Because I don't know, because a lot of times I know they used to do the colors with, because it wouldn't necessarily be that. They were just like, because we've had this issue in my school, like where you had to like, they had like band like handkerchiefs and stuff, because people would just like hang them out of their pockets.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like no, but he wasn't wearing anything like that.
Right.
If anything, he was sagging his pants, but I don't think that's related to any kind of.
No, unless, I didn't pay that close attention to his, but that's what it seemed like. It did seem like. Someone had recognized him or recognized something about him that gave him the hint of like, nah, man, this is not your neighborhood. You're not supposed to be here.
Mm, yeah.
Which is like, I don't know. That's, but yeah, I mean, I kind of agree they can't stay there.
It is scary for them to have that confrontation when he's with someone else.
Right.
Who clearly is not involved in any other gangs. Mm-hmm. Like, once again, she's... doesn't have any tattoos. She's not wearing any colors. She's just like some random girl walking with him.
Right.
You know? So.
Right. I don't know.
And I would be scared too if I were her.
I would. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I definitely would be scared if my boyfriend was like, oh, yeah, that guy just threatened to shoot me. Like that. What? that would freak me out. Even me, yeah. I would be freaked out by that. But then they just seem to be setting up this false dichotomy of we either live in Compton or Las Vegas.
Yeah. Like, yeah, there are other places other than those two. All right, so that pretty much wraps up all of our couples for this week. We didn't hear from John and Christiana, and we have still yet to meet Heather and Dylan, and they have such explosive previews.
I know, it's just seeming more and more and more that those, it's going to be like two episodes of explosiveness, and then
yeah,
nothing.
Someone's getting hauled off to jail like immediately.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, goodness. All right, so who was your student of the week?
It's hard on this one. I don't think anybody main cast really.
Oh, absolutely no
really
one main
distinguish
cast.
Themselves. So no. I mean, I guess I'll just have to go with Kaniqua for seemingly keeping her family around, breaking up with Maurice when he was still in the gang, sticking to her guns, and trying to do the best she can for her daughter.
Yeah, definitely. So also did not pick from main cast. I had student of the week as Brenda, Lindsay's mom. I really liked how she handled kind of talking through everything with Miley Grace.
Mm-hmm.
It was like she kind of reasoned through everything. She was saying, your mom probably was just as upset as you, comforting her kind of in a fair way and giving sound advice and wisdom with the whole situation. And I know she said that she was like, I wanted to break down and cry too, and maybe I will a little bit later, but she was holding it together, even though it's super emotional. I mean, that's her daughter at the end of the day as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. All right. So, class of dunce.
Yes.
I'm with Destiny. Just.
Okay. So did I. How could you not?
Just, oh my God. So much wrong. Especially at just the way it immediately went from her being like, listen, we can't keep any secrets from each other to I'm keeping secrets from you. And it just got worse from there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I thought she was such a hypocrite. I just thought she was really selfish. Like, the whole party girl thing, like, I get it. You're in your 20s. And, like, I'm not going to say that I wasn't, like, really into partying in my 20s. But at the same time, like, I was a responsible partier.
Right.
You know, like, I did not let it hinder my work life. You know, I wasn't partying like on a work night ever.
Yeah, I don't want to go. I don't like him. You go Dr. Phil on it. Be like, how'd that work out for you? Like, how'd that party girl stuff work out for you? Is it working for you?
Yeah.
You're doing good right now? Right.
I wasn't like going to give up parts of my life so that way I could continue to party. And just especially if like the position that she's in by picking a partner like Sean, you know, who already has kids. I get it. You're not going to be a second mom to them. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you're still going to be someone who is a role model to those kids. And Sean, idiot, why are you picking this person, party girl? And then in the same breath, she's talking about how she wants to start a family with Sean. Girl, you are in no place to be starting a family with anyone with that kind of mindset.
Yeah, that. Yeah, because you know who really stops you from partying and drinking?
Babies.
Yeah, they stop you real quick.
Well, some people, not others.
I don't get that. That whole attitude. That whole, this is who I am. I'm not going to change. You can't tell me what to do. And I'm like, you just got out of prison. This is not working for you. You have to do something different. And she's like, nah, I have no interest in doing anything different.
Yeah, and we've kind of talked about this too. Like, it's not, yes, we get it. Alcohol is legal, right? But it's like, it's when you're inebriated that you start making decisions for yourself about things that are illegal.
Right.
Like, while you're drunk, you're like, oh, it'd be really great to get high now too. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas if you're sober, you're less likely to have kind of that war of conscience.
Right.
Conscience.
Yeah, there you
conscience.
Go.
Conscience. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, drinking kind of opens up the idea or the possibilities of drugs. And then now you're on drugs. Now you're like, you know, one step away from dealing, which is what you're doing before to support your drug habits.
Right. So. I mean, it's just like that, yes, I know drinking is legal, but mm-hmm. Like, there are lots of things legal that aren't a good idea, and maybe you should, like, do it more responsibly and think about
specific it. Specific to the person as well, right? She has a history of making poor decisions when she is not 100% sober. Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, and that's part of the thing, too. She said, why did Sean bring this guy home? Because Sean only has talked to and met and corresponded with Sober Destiny.
Yeah, that's true. Well, and that's interesting because we've kind of talked about how drugs are freely available in prison. Right. Kind of wonder a little bit, like, is she kind of going crazy right now? Because, well, actually, she did talk about, like, she made her own hooch in prison. So we know there was something.
I definitely think she was doing stuff in prison. But I just think when she was corresponding with Sean and when there was visits from Sean, she wasn't actively high or drunk.
I kind of feel like she's a user.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, so I feel like it's a scam to her, right? So she can't be all crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Because she still doesn't have him. She doesn't have the stuff yet.
Right. Right? Oh, yeah. I mean, I definitely think everybody was kind of nervous she was going to be a catfish, but I think, yeah. And like her mom said, she's going to chew him up and spit him out.
Yeah, absolutely. Because kind of going along with the whole scamming thing, like, she's trying to scam him to get as much stuff, like money or goods, as possible from him, right? Mm-hmm. And so I feel like now that we know that she really isn't a catfish, part of the reason why she wanted to hide what she really looked like was so that way she wouldn't, like, scare him off and he'd be like, oh, I'm not interested in you now that you're not skinny and cute, like, you know, those pictures
right.
that you had. And then thinking like, okay, well, I can't scare him off. I need to, like, get him to think that that's still me, you know, enough to get all these things from him. Write it out as best as I can. Yeah. All right. So what about your life lesson?
All right. So my life lesson. I wrote a note that we wrote down for Tyrese. Mm-hmm. Who I feel like should know this, as old as he is. It's kind of male fashion advice.
Oh, gosh.
The tag, he bought that suit. I realized this afterwards, by the way. That was a new bought suit because it still had a tag on the cuff. You're supposed to take that tag off.
Okay.
Right? That's my life lesson. When you buy
a suit. Well, if you want to return it, you don't.
There's two things that I tell people to do. And I do this all the time. I don't blame people who, you know, grew up in an environment where nobody wears suits and that stuff. Like, that's fine. Right, and so when I have – a lot of times in my teaching, we have an event where students dress up, and a lot of times it's the first time they've worn a suit coat, right? So I usually get there early and I cut off, I make sure I tell them, you know, that's not supposed to be there, right? They're like, what? I was like, the tag on the sleeve that's not like a tag you leave on, you take it off. But between that, and I don't blame people, you know, who just don't know because they don't know, right? But if you're going to be 50 and I'm really classy and I'm a hot commodity, then you should know some things. Like, I would almost guarantee his suit pockets were sewn shut.
Oh, goodness.
Because when you buy men's suits, the pockets are actually sewn shut. You have to take that string out. That's the other thing I do for my students usually, is tell them, you know, that's sewn shut. It's actually a pocket there. It's not a fake pocket. And they're like, what? So.
You should get one of those seam rippers next time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think I've brought a – I think I might have brought a seam ripper before. I have one.
Yeah, those things are awesome. Yeah. I love
but
those
But that's my thing. When you buy a men's suit, the tag on the – there should be no tags and labels on the outside, and the pockets need to get unsewn.
Good one. All right, so my life lesson is, if you're truly trying to keep a secret, admitting it on camera is not the way to keep the secret a secret. So let's not pretend that it's a secret if you're, like, saying it in an interview.
I don't.
And I feel like that's – Destiny is not the first, and I'm sure she won't be the last.
Right, because at least Sean was like, oh, yeah, I'm keeping secrets, and I'm going to tell her as soon as possible, right? And so you would assume from his perspective, as dumb as he is, that he's like, by the time this is on TV, she'll know.
Oh, sure, I will have told
her. I will have told her. But Destiny was like, no, I'm never going to tell him. Like, you just told him. Like, what do you
know? Yeah, pretty much. She's like, oh, well, I'm never going to be with him that long, so I won't ever have to tell him to his face.
Yeah, that was bad and weird. I get, and sometimes that's just a testament as to how good these producers are in those interviews.
Yeah.
Like, they just...
having them say something.
Getting them to say stuff that they're like, why would you say that? My goodness.
You know, honestly, I kind of feel like that they just have intense interview days.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like you ask the same thing over and over again in different ways that you're going to get what you want out of it.
Right. It's almost like a police interrogation. Like, they know, they know how to get things out of people.
Right. Oof. Yeah. This is our argument for you not being on.
Yes.
Oh, Mr. O and I were talking about, we're going to plot for him to be on before the 90 days. But I just more so want Mr. O to find a foreign fiance.
Right.
Just because it'd be fun.
It'd be fun for you. Okay.
Yes, it'd be fun for me. I could be that friend, the skeptical friend that's always giving you advice ignore.
Do you think they're just trying to get a visa? Yes, you could be.
Do you think that they're just in it for the green card? I think they're just using you for your money.
Well, good luck with that. They're not getting, I don't have very much of that. Okay. Anyway, so we will be back next week on Monday this time.
Monday, yes.
Talk about episode 6. All right.
Okay, sounds good. All
right, see everybody then.
Okay.
Okay, bye.
Thanks. Bye.